Hi everyone, I'm Jennifer, the host of Ikigai with Jennifer Shinkai, where we're going to talk about the Japanese concept of Ikigai, or living a life of purpose. Here you're going to hear inspirational stories from all different types of people who are finding their own life of purpose. You're going to hear about how they found their Ikigai and what they do every day to live an integrated life. So without further ado, let's dive right in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Ikigai with Jennifer Shinkai, wherever you are listening from in the world today. We're recording this episode at the beginning of 2024, and I'm very happy to have my guest, Tengyo Kura, a vagabond, with us today. Tengyo's a really fascinating guy, and I haven't had many chances to chat with him, but when I have spoken to him as part of the Kyojima Expo, I've always found that you are really passionate, interesting, a connector of people, very insightful, and seeming to have just a very different perspective on the world. And so after you interviewed me at the Expo, what did we call that event? The Kyojima Expo? We had like the After Expo.
Yeah, it was Sumida Mukojima Expo. That's the name of the event.
Yes.
And the After Expo is the name of our interview session.
Yeah. And so then I was like, hang on, this is a great opportunity to bring your perspectives to the listeners of Ikigai with Jennifer Shinkai and to think about vagabondism, which is the way that you live your life, and its connection to Ikigai. So maybe before we get into vagabondism, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and why you're here?
Why am I here? Because you invited me.
At many levels, on the planet, in the world.
Sure.
Yes.
I got it. Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Tengyo. Tengyo Kura is my full name. And I'm a vagabond. And I write some stories. So sometimes I call myself also a storyteller. Mm. Basically, I started living outside Japan. I was born in Japan, grew up in Japan. First part of my life in Japan, I lived in a countryside. And then later, I moved to Tokyo. But anyway, when I realized that I really wanted to do for my life, it was actually doing martial arts. Mm-hmm. And then I chose to learn that martial arts. It's called a mixed martial arts. It's an MMA, it's a combat sport. Okay. Yeah, I decided to do it in the USA. So I went to Los Angeles and lived there for a couple of years. That was my first experience to live outside Japan. So since then, my vagabond life slowly started and the rolling, and then I ended up in living in this way after 20 years.
Yeah, I think it was, I saw like 2001 was like the first time that you lived. And what countries have you lived in that period?
The time, I was in the USA, and then afterwards, okay, I realized that I was not made for fighting.
Okay.
I realized that my joy was to share something what we have. So I felt like maybe I could do something else than fighting and competing. And then luckily, my English teacher told me that I could be an English teacher in the future to live around the world and to share what I have with other people. So then I thought like it was a good idea. Mm. So I took his course and I became an English teacher. Then I moved to Mongolia.
Right.
And then, yes, I was an English teacher at the university in Mongolia for 1 year. But then quickly, I realized that I wasn't good enough as an English teacher because I'm not a native English speaker. So I went to I went back to America again and went to a university to become a Japanese language teacher. It's funny that you study being a Japanese teacher in the USA.
Yeah.
It's a bit funny, but anyway, I chose that university because that university was famous for training Japanese teachers. So yeah, I went there. It's a Cornell University in the New York States. And then I became a Japanese teacher, then went to Sri Lanka and so on. Kept teaching in Norway for 4 years, like contemporary Japanese culture, I taught. And afterwards, I went to Latvia, also a European country, to teach Japanese language and the Japanese culture at the secondary school. So that as a teacher, I moved. Yeah.
So the teaching role is the maybe like the engine that moves you around.
Probably.
But you're also a storyteller. So how does this connect and how does this all tie up into what you think of as a vagabond?
Yeah, first, as a teacher, I always try to entertain my students. For example, when I went to Mongolia and then I was thinking, okay, I'm going to teach at the university. So my students would know the certain level of English.
Yeah.
Then I could teach English in English, something like that. But then I realized, I found out that my students even didn't know ABC. They came from the countryside of Mongolia. At the time, the people living in the countryside or living a nomad life, they didn't have an opportunity to encounter, experience any English cultures, like TV in English, movies in English, nothing. Texts, books, basically in Russian or Mongolian. I needed to teach from the really like a basic. Then the university wanted me to make their English level really high. But the reality of the student level is not that high. And then I was sandwiched.
Right.
Yeah. So then I took the student side. I didn't want to give them negative experiences by learning English. I wanted to encourage them. I wanted to just tell them that they are good enough to challenge their own life, to create their own life by themselves. I just used teaching English as a tool to empower my students. I ignored my university's requirement or request, and then I just focused on supporting and encouraging my students' feelings through teaching English. And then I discovered my way to do that is to tell my stories or tell stories from other people, and then not to teach specific English grammars, but just using a minimum volume of English knowledge, then turned them into telling stories that they could feel that life was theirs. Their life could be changed by themselves if they wanted. Stories have many lessons and teachings inside. And even the students were young at the time, and then they didn't know much about the world, but still they could feel that somebody's story close to them. And then they felt like they were the same. They could be capable to change their life by themselves, something like that. Yeah. Then I also really liked telling stories.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a funny story. Sometimes it's a sad story. But anyway, I I felt very much connected when I told stories to my students. I felt a strong connection between me and my students. And that gave me a big joy, like a pure joy,
right,
to be with them. I was a teacher, but at the same time, I was probably already a storyteller in the classroom, wherever I was, in Mongolia, in Sri Lanka, in Norway. And then it was funny. Now we can laugh about it. But anyway, when I was teaching in Latvia at the secondary school, one of my students, she was probably one of the best and one of the most serious students in learning Japanese. She always asked me, "Tengil, please teach me something today. Do not tell stories, just teach me something." because I always forgot teaching Japanese academically and professionally.
Right.
I always focused on telling stories to my students.
Have the pattern of the language and the different use, and there's many examples within there.
Yes.
But it seems
I gave
carry on, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. No, I gave her, I gave that student extra lesson individually after the classroom.
to make up. Yes.
Because I told her when she asked me, "Please teach me something today." And then I said to her, "Come on, look at your classmates now. Now it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They were all exhausted. Early in the morning, they started learning and now they need to relax. So I must tell my stories."
Yes.
So that was my excuse.
It's true, though. That's like the hard part of the day, like the post-lunch timing, and people are starting to digest and they need a different methodology to get them ready for learning again. So
no,
I
really, true. I really appreciated my students coming to the school every day from early morning till the afternoon, staying in the classroom. Outside the school, there is the real world where they could really learn something about life, but they chose or they had to stay in the classroom and listening to teachers. There was, in a way, no choice. And I felt very much grateful that they were with me. Even the world was, you know, inviting them to experience more. But yeah, so that's why I tried my best to share what I had with my students at the maximum level, rather than just teaching Japanese grammar that they could forget in 1 week or something.
Right. Yes, so trying to use that that platform that you have as an educator to not only be by the book, but also by the story through the storytelling. And I love what you described, and Tengil, before you said, as I was expressing myself, I was getting this feeling of pure joy, and I wondered if there's a connection there with the sense of ikigai kan, the feeling of ikigai. What do you think about where your ikigai comes from?
Probably I just love to communicate with people, just love to share our joy together. Always people comes first in my joy.
Yeah.
That's why storytelling is the best way, including teaching. But the storytelling is the best way to create that joy for me. Ikigai probably is to see my friends, my family, my people feel happy.
Yeah.
But anyway, to feel connected. Yeah. We are not alone. That's what I want to share. And that's probably the ikigai for me.
When you said that we are not alone, I just got goosebumps, torihada. And I was wondering about sometimes my clients come to me and say, "Oh, I don't feel like I'm a very good communicator. I need to improve my communication skills." So I wonder, maybe it's hard for you to explain because it's just natural, your natural skill, but how can people communicate in a way that helps people to feel connected or to feel they are not alone? What can we do to make that feeling in the space?
I think I tried not to generate too much expectation between me and the other people in communication. Like I try not to believe that we should understand each other. For me, communication starts, we cannot understand each other fully. We can understand to a certain extent, but we can't really understand who we are, what we are completely, not 100%. I just don't have that kind of expectation. Then from that point, I think we can respect each other as an individual because we are different anyway. Maybe we can share the same feelings, same sensations in a way, but it doesn't mean that we can understand each other completely. That's why I feel take it easy. I know I feel careless, like how much they could understand me. That's okay. I just tell them my respect and appreciation that they are there with me. And then other things like information or the things are not so important for me. This is what I learned through my vagabondism. Like wherever I go and meet people who have different languages, different communication ways, different culture and traditions, it's okay for me to not to understand each other, to make some misunderstandings fine, as long as I tell them my respect and appreciation about their existence. This is what I learned. Love and the respect.
Yeah.
These two are the keys to be connected.
That's absolutely fascinating because I think when you're operating within your own culture, there's an assumption, isn't there, that we assume, especially in a culture like Japan, where just people assume we all have the same background. It's high context culture, so we're all going to understand. It's atarimai. It's obvious. It's the something is futsu. It's normal. When you travel overseas, you go, of course, we're probably not going to understand each other. And I'm in an international marriage, and sometimes my husband will say something, and I'm sure I say something. And if someone from our culture had said that, we'd be like, what? What are you talking about? That's crazy. But because I love what you say. It's okay that we don't understand each other. Actually, it's expected that we don't understand each other. I think that's a really great reminder. And I feel like I can understand that when I travel. Of course, someone in Ulaanbaatar, I don't know anything about like how they live their life. So yeah, we're probably going to misunderstand each other. But I feel this person is also living in Tokyo. There are things that we know about how we live our lives, but that's just assumption, right? It's just assumption and it's not based on anything. So actually it's very freeing to go with, we're probably not going to understand each other. And I don't think many people approach communication like that. I feel like a lot of people expect there'll be a certain level of things which I can assume is how you're going to see the world. Because we're both living in Tokyo and we both went to university, or we're both working for this company. Right? We should understand each other. So I love what you say there. That's very helpful for me. Very freeing. So you spoke a little bit then, thank you, about your vagabondism journey. And I want to get your, first of all, the definition, because I think we didn't define it yet, what it means to you. And if
Sure.
I want to say I'm a vagabond, I
Yeah.
think I'm not a vagabond at all. But why do I think I'm not a vagabond? Tell me what a vagabond is for you, Tengil.
Okay. As far as I learned, the original word of vagabond had been used as negative word,
Yeah.
negative term, like a people who have no job or who have no house or who have some, what do you say, alcohol problems or
Yeah.
like that. But those people who live outside the social system, this is my personal
Yeah.
opinion, but I see some possibilities that those people living outside the social system could bring new values to the society, which is created by fixed ideas
Yeah.
and common senses. It's okay when people live in the social system happily and with the satisfaction. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if somebody who feel confusion or frustration by living in that fixed ideas, living under social pressure, and then they feel that they are not important compared to, let's say, collective happiness of
Yeah.
people living in society. Then I feel sad because always I feel that this is probably because I grew up in Japan. I went through this Japanese education system and traditions, and how they control students or even Japanese parents, typical Japanese parents, I might say, they teach kids like, you should not do that because other people also try not to do it. Always look at other people. If you do that, think how they feel about you. Like, I feel like this individual child cannot cultivate his or her sense of self-respect when he or she has been always said, we don't care about your feelings or thoughts. We care about the people, group mentality.
Yeah.
Their happiness is more important than your individual happiness. This kind of teaching, sometimes maybe, sometimes it works out. But to me, well, it's for small kids, it's very difficult to cultivate their sense of self-respect when nobody listen to them and they only care about other people's feelings. And I think it's not healthy for me. So I grew up in that situation, and then I had very big frustration and confusion when I was young, but I couldn't say that with my words because I was
Yeah.
too young to do it. And now I understood why I was so frustrated or confused at the time. Yeah. So to me, everybody, once they are born, everybody is blessed and welcomed by this world anyway. Afterwards, if we cannot be friends, then let's think about how we can avoid hurting each other. Like this, to me, like a true communication is should be used for this way. Not to be liked by everyone or not to be popular among friends. No, but not to hurt other people
Yeah.
or how to cultivate or how to encourage each other to cultivate our sense of self-respect.
Mm.
Yeah, I. So that's why we are talking about what the vagabond is,
yeah,
right?
But I just want to highlight what you've shared there about. I think it's important for listeners, especially outside of Japan, who maybe sometimes have a rose-tinted glasses view of Japanese collectivism and mm-hmm. how everybody is looking out for other people. And it can be really beautiful, as you say, when it works really well. Mm. But when people, as you described your personal experience, and I see this in my kids, my daughter is a futoko, so going, actually, this isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't working for me. This environment is not working for me. And many people, I think, are feeling this, but don't have the language. Like you said, as a child, you couldn't articulate it. But I think maybe when people also becoming adults, something shameful to put themselves, their self-respect in the center. It's a lot of social programming that needs to be rebalanced, perhaps. So I really appreciate how you've shared that and how you've brought that into this space, so people can hear it from you, and then how this connects to vagabondism, like living outside of this system, right? This is very risky.
Sure. I think it's quite challenging to live as a vagabond in this, especially in Japan.
Yeah.
Because people usually want to know who you are and what you do and what is your title and your education background and so on. But
I'm just thinking when in Japan, when we introduce ourselves with a business card, I'm like, this company, this division, this title, and this is my name.
Yes.
It's like the last thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's confusing for me. And then I always want to meet the pure existence of that person. Not his title, not his job, not his career.
Yeah.
I just want to focus on meeting his or her soul or pure existence, I would say. So anyway, because a vagabond doesn't have any title, any job or anything like proper background, maybe, I don't know. But anyway, vagabond is a very uncertain figure to the society. And it's very difficult to be categorized. And then, and also in Japan, it's a new idea to say, I'm a vagabond. Everybody asks me, what is vagabond? Who is vagabond? And I say, vagabond is a person who doesn't belong to a particular community or particular idea, so on, particular group. So I want to show, especially kids or new generation, that you don't have to follow the social context to be accepted by your friends or your family or your social groups. You can be anybody, or you can be actually nobody, to be loved or to be cared and to be accepted by other people. So today, kids are under great pressure that they have to prove who they are and how good they are, and then how capable, how productive they are to be respected or to be recognized as a good member of society. And it's not true. We don't need to prove anything to be accepted by society. We are born, we are in this world, and it's good enough. So to me, I just use a vagabond to tell other people that identities coming from society or other people or outside your own passion and joy, they are not so important at in the end of your life. So it's my experiment to use myself.
And what are you learning in this experiment? What have you learned about yourself and about how other people respond to your experiment?
Actually, the people's response has been very much positive. Luckily, I lived in different regions, different countries, and I was nobody there. I was a pure stranger to the people living in there. And some of them accepted me as a friend. Some of them accepted me even as a family member. And they still call me, for example, a son or my brother or something. And they mean it. And they keep waiting for my return. So through that experiences, I became able to really believe in humanity and love.
It's beautiful. And what advice would you have for someone who's, wow, I love what Pengyo's talking about. I like to experiment a little with vagabondism for myself. What do people need to know before they make this?
Then, I would say physical distance of movement is not what vagabondism is. What vagabondism is, your heart is moved. Yourself is moved. When you see, for example, a tiny little flower in bloom just outside of your house or along your regular walking street, when you don't feel anything about this tiny, trifle, but beautiful thing in your daily life, to me, it doesn't make sense if how far you go around the world or how many countries you have traveled. I think to me, it's more important to keep your heart always, how can I say, sensitive or, just like that.
Like that openness. It's the true vagabondism is how you can be a vagabond in your own community without stepping foot anywhere. I think when you travel halfway across the world, it's easy because, as you said, like I'm the stranger. So people don't have expectations of you. But actually within your own community that you are part of, the roles that you play, the different connections you have, to actually say that, no, these identities are not important to me. And I want to meet you heart to heart without those things. And what I'm willing to release of the social expectations or be a little bit outside of people's the social system, as you said. I think that's maybe the ultimate test of vagabondism, is to physically move nowhere, but have your, we don't have to have an ultimate test. It's not a competition. I think that's anti-vagabondism, but that's why you moved from fighting, right? So I'm the best vagabond. I don't think there's an award. But maybe I'm thinking, because for many people, they might think, oh yeah, I have to go to somewhere to discover myself. But what can we discover on our doorstep?
When you have an eye to discover something new in usual things in your daily life, even like between your friends, sometimes you discover a different side of your friend and you are shocked or you are surprised, you are amazed. That's also vagabondism. You dive into something you care or you love or you encounter generally. And you try not to be afraid, scared of being exposed to unknown. And you accept that unknown things, and you realize that those unknown things actually, or experience of encountering unknown, changes yourself. So you keep changing yourself by discovering something unknown, diving into unknown. And that's probably the essence of vagabondism, I think.
the sort
so
of
physical
preparing.
movement is not
Not the
important.
point. Yeah, it's not the
Not the
image of
point.
someone with a stick and a handkerchief on the back. This is what I
No,
always
no,
think
no.
of. No.
That's an old school of
Yes.
vagabond.
Yes, it's not it. But so the preparing for surprise, for preparing for wonder and the unknown. And as you said, not having earlier those expectations that we will understand each other. The expectation is the opposite. The expectation is we know nothing about each other. Oh, it's full of possibility, as you said before.
Yes, I know it's not so comfortable to deal with unknown. I know that, and then I also went through that kind of feelings. But if you believe in yourself, then you could dive, then you understand actually how tolerance the other people are or the world is about you. So
There's more space than we expect. People will forgive you, or people will be open for you in ways you
sure,
might.
people, yes.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. We're nearly towards the end of our time, sadly. So I'm going to ask you my final two questions, which I ask all my
Yes.
guests. And
Okay.
the first question is, what is a question I haven't asked that you wish I had asked? Something you just want to
Nothing.
talk about.
Your questions were wonderful.
I have one other question then, which is I'm just wondering about future plans. Do vagabonds make plans, or what's next for you?
There is no plan, but there is always hope. Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not relevant to you, but hope is always there in my life.
Yeah.
And yeah, it doesn't matter if I make plan for that or not, that's fine. But I always hope that everybody can feel that they are respected and that they are loved by the world, no matter who they are. The world is my hope.
Oh, hope. Hope is a great value, a great word. I think it's so important. And I think there are times when things, I'm just thinking from my personal situations, when I feel hopeless is the worst. When I think there's no way out of this, I can't see any escape or any way this is going to change. Yeah, being without hope, being hopeless is maybe the opposite. I feel like hope is a very important element of ikigai. To believe that tomorrow is coming and tomorrow will be different. Something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I prefer having hope to having plans.
Right.
As long as I have hope, my body moves anyway. And that becomes plan, but I don't know about
Yeah.
that.
And what are you
Yeah.
hoping for in 2024 then?
I don't know. Every morning I feel like I'm new to this world every morning. Then I just do my best every day, like putting my pure joy, passion, respect, and appreciation to what I encounter.
Wonderful. And do you have, maybe that was it, but do you have a final message for the audience of Ikigai with Jennifer Shinkai? Something they can take away with them, just one thing from our conversation today.
I don't know, but anyway, I want to tell who have been watching this. Thank you very much for sharing your time, the valuable moment of your life, just being with us. And maybe we will meet somewhere in this world someday.
Yes, I really
So,
hope so. Thank you. So we'll
vagabondism must go
vagabondism must go on. Yes, join him, but don't join
on.
him because it's outside the social system. So you have to be outside. It's not a movement of
Yeah, in their own lives, yes,
Yes, in
vagabondism
your own way.
can be done in anywhere, in any time.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you. We're going to put in the show notes your website, how people can contact you. So if they want to hear you, there's beautiful, you have a beautiful website with gorgeous
Thank
photos
you.
and some of the stories, so people can check those out and continue to be entertained and inspired from that heart-to-heart communication that you have had. So all that remains me to say is thank you so much for your time. It's a really deep conversation today. I have lots to think about as to how to apply this to my own life and as a parent as well, what I'm the expectations I'm putting on my kids. So thank you for sharing that perspective as well. I'm sure my children will be very pleased to hear that too. So thank you so much, Tengyo. And yes, I hope to see you somewhere around.
Yes.
Girl.
But thank you very much, Jennifer, for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Thank you so much. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I had a really good time with you. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. I really hope that you found something you could take away from the episode to help you find your own ikigai and integrate it into your daily life. And I'd love to hear exactly what resonated with you. So pop over to see me on LinkedIn or on my Facebook page. You can find the links in the show notes below. And let me know what you thought was the most important takeaway from the podcast today. And sharing is caring, so feel free to share this episode with one of your friends who you think could benefit from hearing about living a life of purpose. Looking forward to see you on the next episode of Ikigai with Jennifer Shinkai.